kept out of the, you know, loop. So the husband or the father then takes a back seat, and that is not a good situation. That's not what this, as I have always been saying, that the family unit is the basic unit of society, and when the whole society has to fall under the umbrella of the wali, then the smallest unit of the society also has to have one wali, one right. guardian. So the mother has to reinforce that position, and she can't show to her children
that I am the wali myself.
I am the wali myself, and I don't care what your father says.
Thank you so much. Let's go for a short break, and we'll be right back.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear brothers and sisters in faith. I hope that we are answering one of your questions and concerns that you might have with regards to your teenager. Sayyid mentioned that as the community, as the Islamic community or the Islamic Ummah has a wali or a person in charge, a leader, the house, the family, which is the smallest a cell or unit in a society, should also have a wali or a guide or a leader. Oftentimes, some women, because of what they have been experiencing in their own life with regards to the role that they have learned from their own parents, they feel that they're very bossy, they're very assertive, and they don't give the man the arena to become to assert the rules. But there's also the case that the guy, the man, the father is not well aware. He's not a manager. Like she would love to give him the authority, the position to guide the family, but he's too concerned about other things, or he's not a well-informed and educated person who should take the right step at the right time. So she gets she's like, so what should I do with this guy? He's not doing his role. So she takes precedence and she takes his role.
Of course, this is then goes back to the fact that basically a child upbringing starts from your spouse selection, isn't it?
Exactly.
It's much before the birth of a child.
And even much before marriage.
Yes, much more with marriage, of course. So you need to, as I have been saying, that competence and being a person who carries out good deeds, a salih person, is a competent person. He or she needs to be able to basically manage her or his relationships. Management of relationships is the key. Is the key, because management entails planning, doing, checking, applying, adjusting. You plan something, do it, carry it out, check, and then you adjust yourself. And it's the same as we used to say, wise sages used to say, musharata, muraqaba, muhasaba, mu'ataba. I've mentioned that before in some of the programs, that management is general management and specialized management. Whether it is general management of human relations, every human being has to be a good manager. He or she has to be able to carry out musharata, his planning,
with regards to his own conduct and behavior.
Exactly. His conduct with respect to whom? Mm-hmm. There are four relationships, as we have stressed right. and emphasized, with ourselves, with other
God,
human beings.
God, environment, and the family.
Yes. So we need to, with Allah Almighty, managing our relationships requires musharata, planning, deciding to take the proper decision, the proper steps, the appropriate steps based on our worldview, based on our ideology. We then carry them out with muraqaba. with the remembrance of Allah Almighty, that Allah Almighty is watching over us. Then we carry out muhasaba, account, make accounts of what we have done. And then we need to do ma'atiba, to correct our course if we are deviating. So this has to be, this management has to be learned by human beings at a very, very early age.
Which a lot of us actually don't do.
And so managing, leading, leadership qualities, managing, education, all of this is something we have been mentioning, that education is a sort of leadership.
Right.
And therefore, we need to learn these things, and then we come to, before we get married, we have these things in our minds, which we don't usually have them, especially when we are going in, living in Eastern societies, marriages are arranged. Of course, I'm not saying that arranged marriages are bad marriages. You need, whether it's arranged or it's someone you, whom you choose, but the basic thing is that we need to make the right choice in an intelligent way. We need to understand each other. We need to be able to, you know, see whether we are compatible with each other.
Let's go for a short break and we'll be right back.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, honor your children and teach them good manners.
يا مقضي الخيرات يا مقضي الخيرات.
Welcome back, you brothers and sisters. We're talking about the root of problems or rudeness or negative behavior that we witness from the side of our teenagers. And we finally got its root in the behavior of the parent themselves, where our expert, Sayyid Naqawi, mentioned that much before marriage actually takes place, a person has to learn to manage his or her behavior through planning, carrying out that plan, checking it, and adjusting himself or herself. Which, unfortunately, most of us, although Islam is so rich and beautiful in instructing a gorgeous life for all of us, we seem to, you know, delve so much deeper into the material realm, and we get educated with regards to physics and chemistry and our future career, and we unfortunately neglect to pay attention to our self-development, which is the essence of a righteous family. Okay, what next?
So we need to, as we said, model, give them a model for from ourselves, and to assert that model and to show them this is, but this has to be done with love, as we have been saying. We should show them assertive behavior, but they should also know that it is because our parents love us. If they are setting these boundaries, if they are asserting them and demanding from us, it's purely because of the fact that they love us. The way we conduct ourselves, the way we enforce those rules is important, because we need to show them that it is for their sake, for their benefit, and it's pure love and compassion for them. And they should understand that it is for them that we need to model them, we need to mentor them, we need to show them that this is something which is for their benefit. And we need to, you know, give them all the time, we can't give up on them. We can't say, though, they are
a
failure.
Too late. I can't do anything.
No.
It's a failed case.
It's a failure. No, we have to try and try again. We need to give them a chance. Every failure leads to success. We need to back them up. You need to give them confidence. We need to support them and remind them all the time. And it's not easy to do. We can't expect results in a day or so. It takes time. We have to be patient.
Months or sometimes years.
Yes.
Thank you so much. This takes us to the end of another episode of the program Islamic Upbringing. Thank you very much for listening to us. And wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space returned upon rest.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, make haste because it will all be over too soon. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners. It's an honor to be here. We're talking about how we need to make haste because it will all be over too soon. So what are we talking about? Of course, we are talking about the holy month of Ramadan. We are in the holy month of Ramadan. And so, you know, make haste because very surely and most surely, this holy month of Ramadan is going to be over all too soon. And you know what? The holy month of Ramadan, with its beautiful breeze of forgiveness and joy and cheer and spiritual bliss, it truly does go by all too quickly. And it's quite unfortunate because when we get to the end of the holy month of Ramadan and we move into the month of Shawwal, and after the first week or so of the month of Shawwal, we really miss the holy month of Ramadan. It is interesting in many of the du'as that we find from the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, and specifically Imam Sajjad alayhi salam, the fourth divinely appointed Imam. You know, we find that the Imam talks about the holy month of Ramadan as if it were this very close and intimate and private friend of an individual. And, you know, it was a holy month that loved us and protected us and gave us value and honor. You know, it helped us to seek forgiveness and establish a connection with the Almighty Allah. It was this holy month in which, you know, we gained so many different things, and we lost and we got rid of the burden of so many sins. And it is this kind of a friend or entity or essence or being, the holy month of Ramadan, that we are going to miss when it is all over a little too soon.
Ramadan al-mustabin jaa bin nur al-mubin. Ramadan, Ramadan, Ramadan al-qanitin.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how we need to make haste before this invitation is over all too soon. So, of course, we're talking about, you know, making haste. So what are we saying? Well, you know, these few days, handful of days, really, that we have left of the holy month of Ramadan, you know, even if that amounts to being two solid weeks that are left in the holy month of Ramadan, but we need to take advantage of these 2 weeks. Of course, the things that are, you know, recommended, such as asking for forgiveness, is something that we need to be actively doing in this holy month of Ramadan, that which is left, at least, of the holy month of Ramadan. You know, most probably, we have these beautiful nights of Qadr coming up, and we'll talk about, you know, what we should do in those nights in another program. Of course, we have this idea of improving our relations with our friends, with our family members, with our spouses, with our children, with our parents, things that we haven't even started to talk about yet in our programs. Of course, this idea of establishing a connection with the Almighty Allah, who has invited us to this banquet, and many of the other different things, you know, focusing on our prayers, really overcoming our base carnal desires and our base feelings that we have, you know, that prevent us from being able to live that Islamic lifestyle. And of course, things along this nature. We really need to pay attention to these things in this holy month of Ramadan, you know, and really take this opportunity that we have been given by the Almighty Allah to be able to live and refresh our Islamic lifestyle, and make haste, because surely, you know, this holy month of Ramadan is over all too soon. And then we are going to be wishing that this was the first of the holy month of Ramadan all over again. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of A to Z. Don't forget to visit our website at parsetoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
You lift me up high, you spread my wings and fly me to the sky. So alive, it's like my soul thrives in your light. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya
In the limelight.
Last week, Iran, Russia, and China kicked off their annual naval drills in the northern Indian Sea, specifically the Gulf of Oman, to ensure maritime security and combat piracy. The theme of the joint operation being creating peace and security together. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Press TV noted, as the spillover into the Indian Ocean begins, security for the region is at an all-time high demand. Iran will not tolerate U.S. warships being deployed near its territorial waters to protect Zionist commerce. Thus, these drills serve as an essential practice for Iran to test its new weaponry and be prepared should the U.S. think it can arrogantly impose itself on Iranian waters on behalf of the Tel Aviv regime. Concerning this situation and the drills from last week, immediate developments can be observed, especially for Iran. Shortly after the drills concluded, the U.S. intelligence community's 2024 threat assessment report was released, which has stated the following about the Islamic Republic's capabilities. Iran's missile, UAV, air defense, and naval capabilities will continue to threaten U.S. and partner commercial and military assets in the Middle East. And Iran will remain a threat to Israel and U.S. allies and interest in the region well after the Gaza conflict. This is a direct deference to Iran's participation in the naval drill, its strong presence in safeguarding its territorial waters, and its dedication to the Palestinian cause, rejecting any foreign presence within its waters, especially if it is in collaboration with the Zionist regime. Of course, these are all defensive practices, despite the U.S. claims to them being offensive. In another interview regarding the joint drill, Commander Irani said the presence of U.S. and U.S.-aligned countries is unjustified because their presence has never created security, adding that experience has shown that they have brought the greatest insecurity to their region. It is clear the emerging naval coalition is intent on actually delivering international maritime security, unlike U.S.-led countries that only serve their own interest at the expense of international security. Iran, Russia, and China are all part of the BRICS Economic Alliance, as well as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, with Iran being among the latest members of both alliances. The BRICS Alliance intends to represent the global majority in regard to their economic future. Any financial plan that does not guarantee security is doomed from the start, and so the drills will only become more sophisticated as official joint security operations are solidified. Azerbaijan, Kazakhstan, Oman, Pakistan, and South Africa were also invited as observers of the drill, countries that are either in the BRICS and or SCO alliance or have regional relevance and security interest in regards to trade routes. Clearly, the naval alliance is demonstrating to all interested parties that the unipolar security guarantees are obsolete compared to what they have to offer. Mutual cooperation and respect for sovereignty while guaranteeing complete security responses. The naval drills will only become more sophisticated and more common as the security demands increase and economic alliances deepen. For example, with Iran's acquisition of the Russian Su-35 and an evolving lineup of jets from China's People's Liberation Army, aerial elements will be added not only to sea drills, but land defense drills as well. The security belt forged by the Triple Alliance is sure to expand, much to the dismay of the American imperialist, which has failed to set up a competent naval coalition even in response to Yemen's defensive operation, with Operation Prosperity Guardian falling apart before the first ship sailed. Countries will soon need to choose between sovereignty and multipolarity or submission and hegemony. The remaining question, what does the world expect as a response from a declining in power? One that cannot even muster up enough allies for a competent coalition. Russia, China, and Iran seem to have been intent on being prepared for the worst for benefit of global majority.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. Well, once more, I am honored to be here. And this is Asma. Well, I'm not alone. I have a co-host in here. Brother Mustafa.
Assalamu alaikum. So happy to be here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's always happy to be in Youth Station.
We've been talking about different things related to Ramadan. And of course, we know that Ramadan is a very spiritual month. It has a lot of spiritual benefits for us. However, apart from the spiritual benefits, you know, there's a lot of talk about sort of the non-spiritual benefits of Ramadan, right? I can definitely think of many, many different benefits.
Non-spiritual benefits.
Yeah, non-spiritual benefits. You know, things that impact other... Although, you know, one way... It depends on how you define spirituality as well, right? One could say that all of life is spirituality. But sometimes we can sort of like separate the two, right? What would you say are some benefits that you could see in your own life or in others that you've seen that would maybe fall into that category?
The one that is interesting, like I used to say that there are some of those people who, when they enter the holy month of Ramadan, it's more of a party. Like for these party comers, the thing that's going to happen in their life is that they're going to take care of what they eat.
Mm.
In a more of a, you know, as if they are going to have more of a healthy diet, like in these days, because they have to watch over whatever they eat. So this is one point.
There's definitely a lot of health benefits. Mm-hmm. There's so much discussion about, you know, the number of health benefits that fasting has during Ramadan. You know, just losing weight, I think. But, you know, we do have like a lot of recommendations about what we should be eating, how we should be breaking our fast. I think if people follow those sort of... So the Prophet and the Imams, they gave us diet plans as well.
Yeah.
You know, what are some of the best things? And now we have doctors who do the same thing as well. They tell us, you know, what you should eat, when you should eat it. I think if you follow those sort of guidelines, then you won't face that issue. Whereas you'll face that issue throughout the year as well, in a way, right?
Exactly.
If you're not having a good diet. But, I think I mentioned another episode, you know, I taught intermittent fasting, right?
Yeah,
which is very popular, you know, in terms of losing weight. You know, the people use that. Intermittent fasting would be basically you're fasting on some days and you're not fasting others, or you're fasting certain hours of the day and you're not fasting others.
Yeah, special hours.
So those have like benefits on your diet. Yeah. So I think that's like just one of the main benefit, one of the big benefits that I can see.
Exactly. For the people who are seeking to know what are the non-spiritual benefits that I would get from the holy month of Ramadan, the other one, I guess, is going to be for those people who go to work. They have to learn how to manage their time.
Managing your time, on top of that, I would say managing like yourself and your like, you know, stress.
Exactly.
Without food and water and like, you know, maybe sleep. That is a, like, it trains you to manage stress better, right? I feel that is a benefit. Although I know in the beginning of Ramadan, like my wife will tell me that I'm being really grumpy, for example, you know. For us who, you know, for anyone who's trying to be better, I would say then you'd learn to handle stress and like difficult conditions way better than
that's a nice point as well. And then when the holy month is finished, I guess for those people who go to work regularly, like they're going to be so proud of themselves for what they have achieved, because the number of hours they're going to have asleep is going to be reduced. The number of time they're going to be devoting for their job is going to be reduced at home, I mean.
Right.
Like if you have a research like me, you're not going to have enough of time to go for it. So things are going to be so problematic, yet you have to learn how to manage it.
Well, you know, I think that's another benefit, by the way, that it breaks you from your normal routine.
Mm-hmm.
If you're maybe spending, let's say, too much time on your studies or too much time on research, and those are things that you should be doing, I think Ramadan gives you the opportunity to sort of break away from that and devote your time elsewhere. It's kind of giving you a break, right, from your day-to-day life.
Mm-hmm.
So I see that almost as a positive as well.
I hope teachers would understand that. that would be so good if they understand this angle of life as well.
Right. Another part I think related to this is like breaking your habits, right? I think we all have certain habits that we would like to let go of, we would like to change, right? And Ramadan has that benefit in the sense that not only is your routine changing, but your willpower is becoming much stronger.
Oh,
right?
Now that you're speaking of willpower, let's go for a break.
Okay.
And then we'd be back.
Okay. Okay, so we're back from the break, and I
yeah,
was...
Yeah, and it's Youth Station, by the way.
And this is Youth Station. We're back from the break. And, you know, I was discussing right before the break that one of the sort of...
willpower.
The one of the non-spiritual benefits, maybe, although I think this
for
is...
For the party comers.
I think, by the way, this is directly related to spirituality, but we can... Sometimes people will categorize it as sort of non-spiritual, right? In the sense yeah. that... Because your willpower is used in many places, right? When you're not, when you're forcing yourself to not eat, you know, when you're preventing yourself from not eating, obviously your willpower is becoming stronger. And so in Islam, you know, we talk about the jihadun nafs, you know, yeah. our struggle with ourselves, right, which is considered to be the greatest struggle, even more than like a normal war, for example. We all know the popular hadith, you know, when the Prophet went to war.
To overcome the internal conflict.
So one way to do that, by the way, is we're recommending Islam is to even... prevent yourself from having halal things, right?
Yeah.
So, of course, eating and drinking is a very halal act, right? You know, we're supposed to eat it to survive. But during Ramadan, we're told not to do it, right? We're told not to do this halal act. It mm-hmm. becomes forbidden for us. That's one way we're making ourselves stronger.
A practice of that conflict and war, the internal world that we go yeah. through.
And that helps break habits. Mm-hmm. Like I know many people who smoke, right? And they can't smoke during this time. Some people end up coming out of it and they quit their smoking habit as well because of Ramadan. Not
yeah,
everyone.
They have a strong will, I suppose, because some other people, unfortunately, it's very difficult to change your habits.
It is.
Only by going through 30 days unless... You are concentrating on that. You are focused on that desire to change something in your habits.
You're right. I mean, that may not be the only method. You know, yeah. sometimes it requires more. Sometimes it may require medicine mm-hmm. if you want to quit certain habits. But what we're saying is that it helps, right? It has a benefit.
Another
even on
point,
a small level.
Yeah. Sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah, go ahead.
So another point I would say is to wake up at midnight and have some praying time for yourself. That is also another interesting part. Actually, it's
how
spiritual.
Would you say, yeah, how would you say that's not spiritual?
See, for example, like for when my grandfather was living with us, when he was with us, he could not actually fast. But the thing that happened for him was that he woke up with us for the midnight mm. and then this was a change of mood for him. Like, he was right. sick and he could not fast. So, spiritually, he was not connected to the ritual that we were right. going through. But at the same time, he was going through some good emotions and feelings, like he's waking up in the midnight and he's having some, you know, chit-chat with his
right.
children. So, it's going to be a change of a mood.
You're right. And I see that with my kids, by the way. You know, my kids are 10. My son is now 10 and my daughter 7. So my son, for the past at least 3 to 4 years, I remember he would love waking up for yeah. the morning, you know, for the sahri, the morning meal before fasting. And yeah, he loved like we were sitting in the dark. You know, he wouldn't let us turn on the lights, for example.
Yes.
We would have a small light on. He enjoyed that aspect of it a lot.
Now,
so.
Even we have been through that. I remember even
yeah,
in my
yeah.
childhood.
Yeah, yeah, same.
It was just an amazing thing to wake up with them. And the night which they did not wake me up, I was just angry with them in the morning. Why didn't you wake me
oh,
up?
Oh, man, you sound just like my son. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Because it's an interesting emotion, like
yeah, yeah.
it's a different thing.
Well, related to this is sort of, I would say, the social aspect or impact of Ramadan, right? That just the fact when we sit down together and we have this sort of different meal,
yeah.
either with, if it's just with our family or even if it's with, you know, friends, that's a huge benefit, I think.
Of
like,
course,
just getting
yeah.
to see people, getting to talk to people.
You get to know more about them.
Yeah, yeah. And then I would say a big non-spiritual benefit is the food, right? The
yeah.
amazing dishes that our moms mm-hmm. or other family members make.
They're going to be too creative in this month.
Right. So those are amazing benefits that I think we can see that come out of this.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Well, one other factor I think that sort of comes to my mind is concentration. Oh, yeah. I don't know if this is a benefit, by the way. I think this is maybe a non-benefit.
Yeah, to concentrate more for people who are overthinker, it's not a good thing to learn.
Although, you know, one interesting thing is that, okay, so one thing that happens for me during Ramadan is I end up sleeping less, right? Even if I want to sleep more, I can't. I think a lot of times people have the opposite effect, they end up sleeping more.
Yeah.
For me, and so the interesting is during the beginning of the month, I'll still sleep more. But as I continue fasting, I see that I have more energy or like my sleep becomes less, right?
Yeah.
And sometimes, yes, the concentration does become better. In what sense? In the sense that when you're not focused on, for example, eating or food or anything else, you're able to like sort of...
You have one single direction.
Yeah, yeah. You're able to like really focus
on...
There
are no other temptations.
Yeah, yeah. And by the way, our teacher was telling us just today that one of the benefits... So, you know how many times we start feeling really like lazy or sleepy like towards the afternoon?
Yeah.
But if you sort of persevere through that, you sort of suddenly see like your energy's back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's actually a physiological reason for that, right? At the beginning, your stomach, you know, is sending messages to your brain. It's saying, hey, you know, this person needs like food, like
yeah.
send food, like it needs glucose, you know, it needs all those things to sort of function. But when you sort of don't do that, then the next step is that your body turns to the fat that's stored within you. Right? And it starts breaking down that fat and it turns that into glucose and that sends the messages to your brain that, you know, this person has glucose in them. And that makes you feel less hungry or less tired.
I was actually watching a documentary which was fully about this topic that you already mentioned. Mm. They were saying that fasting is a good way of protecting your body from getting into cancers. Because your body is going to break all those unneeded cells that are gathering together. Mm. So then your body is going to be protected from cancer. So
if you don't have a good diet, then it's going to ruin
all
your exercise.
All the workouts are going to go into nowhere.
So similar with fasting, you know, nobody's saying that you're guaranteed to have like health benefits.
Yeah.
It's only if you sort of meet other conditions as well.
If only you concentrate on what you want.
Right, right. And speaking of concentration, I can't even pronounce words that well right now.
It's okay.
Yeah. So
you're fasting.
I don't know if this is gonna, if they will allow to air this, but this is the first day of Ramadan, by the way, that we're doing this. So if I sound a little bit off,
so all the errors are just exonerated.
One thing I want to add, though, is that, you know, all of these things that we're saying are non-spiritual, they do sort of, they all lead up to spirituality, ultimately, right?
Yeah.
If your health is good, if you're concentrating, if you have a good social life, you have a good family life, these are all sort of, these are acts of worship, right, from an Islamic point of view, you know, and they do add to your spirituality. Mm-hmm. For me, it's very difficult to divorce things from spirituality, you know, or to separate things, because I kind of like to see things in
They're
that
all
lens.
Interconnected.
Yeah, it's all interconnected. Like, it's part of who you are.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to disconnect yourself from who,
exactly.
who you are, right?
So whether it is spiritual or non-spiritual, I wish everybody to have a fruitful and blissful month in which they could just help themselves grow more and more and redefine themselves in a better way. So thank you, brother, and thank you, dear listeners.
Yep.
This was all the time
we had for today. Thank you for listening.
So until another session, wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings, be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif. Allah,
Happy Iranian New Year. Happy Nowruz. In lockstep with spring, the season of renewal and freshness, and the greening of nature, we here at Arabi English Radio wish you happiness and prosperity.
Limelight. Trinity College in the UK has invested millions of dollars in companies involved in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza and businesses that benefit from the occupation of Palestine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. Middle East Eye wrote, scores of students held a protest outside the University of Cambridge's wealthiest college recently to demand the higher seat of learning divest millions of dollars from companies arming, supporting, and profiting from the Zionist regime's war on Gaza. Demonstrators carried signs reading, cease fire now, and divest from genocide outside Trinity College following a story published by Middle East Eye last month, which found that the college had invested £61,735 in the Zionist regime's largest arms company, Elbit Systems. Based in the city of Haifa, Elbit produces at least 85% of the drones and land-based equipment used by the Zionist regime's army. The company's weapons have reportedly been used in Gaza since October 7th and are also reported to have been used in the occupied West Bank and southern Lebanon. Middle East Eye also revealed that Trinity has investments worth approximately $3.2 million in Caterpillar, a U.S.-based heavy equipment company that has long been the target of boycott campaigns for its sale of bulldozers to the Zionist regime's army. At least one of the banners held up at the recent protest explicitly referenced Elbit and Caterpillar's roles in the occupation of Palestine. As the world-leading educational institution, Trinity must not be investing in companies causing so much death and destruction that may amount to genocide, and instead should be supporting the college's mission of advancing education and research, the protesters said in an open letter. Pressure has been mounting on the Trinity College to divest from companies complicit in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza after the UK-based International Centre of Justice for Palestinians, ICJP, issued a legal notice to the institution warning that officers, directors, and shareholders at the college may be individually criminally liable if they maintain their investments in arms companies that are potentially complicit in Israeli war crimes and crimes against humanity. On March 9th, an activist from Palestine Action spray-painted, then slashed a 1914 painting of Lord Balfour at Trinity. The incident, which was condemned by Britain's Deputy Prime Minister Oliver Dowen, is now under police investigation. To date, more than 31,000 Palestinians have been killed and at least 71,000 wounded in the Zionist regime's war on Gaza. The UN announced earlier this month that 80% of Gaza is now uninhabitable, while the hunger rate stands at 100%. The UN and several aid agencies have repeatedly warned that Gaza is on the brink of famine and have pressed the Zionist regime to allow aid in. At least 25 people have died from malnutrition and dehydration since the start of the war, including a 10-year-old child with the cerebral palsy last month. The UK joined Jordan, Egypt, the UAE, the US, Germany and France in coordinating aid drops with the Zionist regime in different areas of the blockaded Gaza Strip. However, the besieged Palestinians have said that airdropped aid quantities are too small to deal with the needs of a starving population in the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, Crescent International wrote, as the low-intensity regional war and transformation take shape in West Asia, the fronts against apartheid Israel and its Western enablers are acquiring a multidimensional character. One of those multidimensional characteristics involves a grassroots economic boycott by consumers of Western and Israeli businesses. Economic boycott against the Zionist regime is not a new phenomenon. It hits the apartheid entity where it feels and hurts the most. It's one of the most significant weak spots of the Zionist regime occupying Palestine. While purely econometric reasons are certainly important, it is only one of the factors and not the factor. A significant number of Zionist colonizers in Palestine hold foreign citizenship. Figures vary from 10% according to the Dual Citizenship Report to 17% according to Times of Israel report of 2016 to 22% according to Israeli blogger Daniel Barobim. There is a speculation that the actual figures may be as high as 35% or even 50% of Israelis holding dual citizenship. They will not stick around in a hostile environment, which will become even more difficult as economic, political, and military pressure continues to increase on the Zionist regime. When a better option is easily available, away from war and economic ruin, not all, but many people will opt for the easier option, leave. Both the current Zionist mass murder campaign in Palestine and the regional assistance to Israel are unprecedented in nature and totally out of proportions. This applies to the economic and boycott angle of resistance against Israel and its Western enablers. What makes this current limited impact a longer-term strategic challenge to the Zionist regime and brands facing the grassroots boycott is that this time, due to the scale of events in the region, more people have joined and it is clearly having some impact. The phenomenon of limited impact creates a vicious perception cycle, which then translates into concrete negative monetary impact. As some brands can no longer conceal that the grassroots boycott is having an impact, more ordinary consumers are motivated by the fact that their objection to genocide in Palestine is working. This results in more people joining the boycott since they feel empowered. This phenomenon snowballs into a much bigger boycott movement. Those familiar with the politics of the so-called Muslim Street in West Asia and the Arab world know well that boycotting of brands closely associated with Western imperialist regimes has been around for decades.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی است.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23rd, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with government officials on the occasion of the month of Ramadan. We read in another part of the holy dua of Abu Hamza, O God, bestow mercy on me. We ask God to show mercy on us and bestow your blessings on me when they put me on the ground, washing my body, and when my dear ones and relatives turn me over to different sides. We ask Allah the Exalted to bestow His mercy and blessings on us when our body is being washed after death. At that moment, we are involuntarily in the hands of those who perform ghusl. This will happen to each and every one of us. None of us will escape that moment. It will happen to all of us, and therefore you should think about it. And show kindness to me when my people carry my corpse into the grave. They carry us, hold us on their shoulders, and take us to our eternal home. And be generous towards me when I am alone in my grave, entering upon you. They will bury us in a grave. This is a reminder. So, we should not ignore these moments, and they should always be in front of our eyes. This is one of the reasons why we are advised to visit graveyards and the dead.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Some people do not like it when they are reminded of death. They should not dislike it because this is a cure and medicine. It is a cure for our selfishness, our ignorance, and our lust. We read in another part of the holy dua of Abu Hamza, O God, bestow your mercy on me when I have no answer to give, when I cannot find my tongue to give you answers, and when my mind makes a mistake when you ask me a question. When we are short of answers before divine questions, we should know that divine questions are not like the ones that are asked in this world. In this world, we can maneuver the other side by using his own folly, ignorance, and emotions, but there, everything is clear to the being who questions us. Therefore, we should think about that moment.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh,
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Pakistan has joined the global celebrations of a very special Nowruz that has coincided with the holy month of Ramadan. Nowruz, which translates to New Day, is celebrated by millions of peoples worldwide as the Persian New Year, symbolizing rebirth, renewal, and arrival of spring.
To all my fellow Pakistanis celebrating Nowruz, I say let's cherish our cultural diversity and come together in solidarity. May this new year bring us prosperity, peace, and happiness.
Despite its Persian origins, Nowruz in Pakistan is celebrated with a distinctive local flavor, incorporating regional traditions and customs. Pakistanis have their own customs to welcome Nowruz. Besides preparing special meals and decorating the dining area with special dried and fresh fruits, the ancient occasion also creates an opportunity for individuals to mend broken ties, forgive others, let go of the past, and build stronger relationships in the coming new year.
For me, Nowruz is a time of reflection and renewal. It's a reminder to leave behind the past year's troubles and embrace the opportunities that lie ahead. It's a celebration of life, growth, and the beauty of nature.
We clean our house, we visit our friends, we celebrate this day, we enjoy a lot of festive foods, and you know, this day brings a lot of joy and happiness in our lives. So, happy Nowruz to all of you.
Pakistan's President Asif Ali Zardari and Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif have extended their heartfelt greetings to all those who are celebrating Nowruz in Pakistan and around the world. Both leaders also called for embracing the spirit of Nowruz and promoting the message of peace, compassion, unity, and kindness.
Nowruz signifies regeneration at the start of a new cycle. It transcends simple festivity, standing as a cultural landmark that enhances the diversity of human society. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
After weeks of silence, Kitab Hezbollah Resistance Group, one of the biggest units within Iraq's popular mobilization units, reminds the government, as well as officials in the committee tasked with overseeing the withdrawal of U.S. military, that they should not grant immunity to the occupying forces, or else gates of hell will open.
These foreign forces have been violating our sovereignty for years now. In January 2020, Donald Trump ordered the assassination of our anti-terror commanders, Lieutenant General Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in Baghdad Airport. And lately, they are violating it by assassination of Iraqi resistance commanders.
Kitab Hezbollah also warned that any removal of leaders of popular mobilization units must be decided by the PMU internally. It says acting otherwise would be a significant mistake.
Our government has made it clear on multiple occasions that the need for U.S. military forces have ended. Our security forces are capable of running the country's security system and face any threat. Washington is clearly trying to rally around the negotiations, and it is a clear attempt to delay their withdrawal from the country.
In January, the Iraqi resistance decided to halt the attacks on U.S. bases in Iraq and Syria. The attacks were started on October 19 in solidarity with Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. Observers say that the suspension was to allow a climate of serenity for talks between Baghdad and Washington over the U.S. military presence. But as some have rightly noted, Washington has no intention to change its behavior in Iraq.
It is obvious that Washington is trying to gain more time to keep its military presence in Iraq. Our government needs to push forward and speed up the pace of negotiations to end the presence of these foreign forces and save our country's political, economic, and social stability.
On paper, the U.S. military forces are present in the country for advisory purposes, as well as training the Iraqi forces to fight Daesh terrorist group. However, in practice, the U.S. forces have shown a different objective by violating Iraqi sovereignty, attacking PMU positions, and killing top Iraqi commanders. Since the start of their operations in October, the resistance in Iraq has been pushing the government to end the U.S. military presence in the country. Also, they have time and again reiterated their solidarity with Palestinians. Muslim Salim, Baghdad.
Russian President Vladimir Putin addressed the nation after the deadly attack in Moscow, which killed dozens of civilians. The president denounced the massacre as a bloody and barbaric terrorist attack